Coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
And I begin to sort of realize that, you know, I could learn all the biochemistry and genomics and physiology and, you know, every bacteria in your microbiome, but it wouldn't matter if we didn't have the power of connection and love and support, accompaniment, feedback, accountability. And that is really the other hidden ingredient in functional medicine, which is, you know, food is medicine, but also love is medicine.
Let's talk about red light therapy. Did you know that there are over 4,000 publications in PubMed that talk about the benefits of exposing yourself to red light and near infrared light therapy? Benefits like improving cognition, improved skin health, muscle recovery, better sleep, reduced joint pain and inflammation, and filling in the gaps on the days that you can't get out into the sun, which you know is super important to supporting your circadian rhythm. And that is incredibly key as we gear up for winter and seasonal affective disorder. It's actually freaking crazy that something as simple as exposing yourself to the right type of light could have all these benefits and more. That's why I'm so pumped to tell you about Juve and their suite of red light therapy panels. I use the Juve light every night religiously to support my mitochondria and keep my circadian rhythms running optimally. And by the way, it's super simple to use. I keep my Juve sitting on my bedroom dresser, and about 20 minutes before I go to bed, I turn it on. I sit right in front of it for maximum red light exposure, and I soak it all in while I typically read a book or write in my journal. Talk about multitasking. I've been doing this for 3 years now, and I'm completely addicted. Let me tell you about something else that Juve just created, which is an affordable way to jump into the world of red light therapy. It's called the Juve Go 2.0. And a couple of reasons why I love it is, number one, you can travel with it, which means you can take it anywhere. And it also has a setting called ambient mode. I like to use the ambient mode setting at night to protect my melatonin production, in addition to avoiding blue light, which helps me get a deeper, more restful night's sleep. If you want to jump into the world and get all the benefits of red light therapy for a limited time, Juve is offering my listeners an exclusive discount on your first order. Just go to juve.com/Drew and use my code DHRU for $50 off. That's JOOVV.com/DHRU and use the code DHRU for some exclusive discounts. Some exclusions do apply, and keep that in mind that it's a limited time offer. This episode is brought to you by Vuori. A few months ago, I saw my buddy and business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, working out in some super stylish activewear. So I asked him, "Hey brother, what are you wearing? I'm totally into it, by the way." That's when he told me and my team about Vuori. Vuori is a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect for anyone, men and women alike, who are tired of traditional old workout gear. What makes Vuori special is their style, versatility, and comfort. First and foremost, the clothes look great. I really mean it. They look great. Not just in the gym, but outside the gym too. Now, personally, I'm not trying to get compliments for my clothes, but I've gotten more than I can count wearing their Sunday performance joggers. Secondly, they're crazy comfortable, which also means they're versatile. They can be used in just about any activity like running, training, swimming, yoga, but they're also great for lounging or a weekend run to the farmer's market. I wore my Vital Crew during my hike and then washed it, of course, and then wore it to dinner the next day under my leather jacket on Saturday. It worked perfectly in both environments, and I know that because my wife confirmed it. Just ask her. Lastly, Vuori is committed to sustainability, which is a must for companies these days when it comes to supporting them. Vuori is 100% offsetting their carbon footprint and also reducing and offsetting 100% of their plastic footprint from 2019 onward. If style, comfort, and versatility and sustainability matter to you, it's time to make an investment in your happiness and try Vuori out. For our listeners, they're offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at vuoriclothing.com/Drew. That's vuoriclothing.com/Drew, DHRU. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but you'll enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. Go to vuoriclothing.com/Drew or check out the link in the show notes and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Hi everyone, Drew Perowit here. For much of human history, friendship was about survival. No one, no matter how strong or independent they were, could live life alone. So we invested in our village, in our community, in our tribe, and developed deep friendships and family ties because we needed to survive. It was part of our existence. Today, most of us aren't reliant on our friends for daily survival. Our basic needs can be met through the efforts of a lot of people who we aren't directly connected to. We still need people to grow food for us on the farms that are out there. We still need people to run the grocery stores. We still need people at the power plants to keep the electricity and the lights on. But these aren't people or individuals who we have a direct relationship with. That's why we're seeing more isolation in the Western world than ever before, because technically we don't need, in quotes, we don't need each other to survive on a daily basis. But just because you might not need a friendship to help you fetch water or grow food or build a house doesn't mean you don't need friends to thrive. Thriving in life means having deep and meaningful friendships that have your back and help you live a life of purpose, courage, creativity, and resilience. In today's mini episode, I speak with my friend, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, and my friend and business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, about the power of love, community, and friendship on our overall health. We also talk about why having friendships outside of our intimate relationship with our partner is essential. Yes, I want everybody to be friends with their husband, their wife, their partner, their boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it might be. And we need other friends too. We can't put everything on just our partner alone, because that's how we create deeper meaning and joy in life. Let's listen in, starting with my good friend, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, one of the most influential medical doctors in the world and definitely in the UK, and the host of the top podcast, Feel Better, Live More. So let's actually give a big picture view of how friendship and connection is translated into every area of our life. Let's say, in a completely off topic from health, let's say you want to find the job of your dreams, the career of your dreams. You want to switch careers because you don't love what you want to do. Well, it turns out that only 50% of jobs in Europe and America are actually posted on sites that are publicly available or career pages for you to find. The rest of them, the other 50%, are through networking and deep connections that are out there. Friends saying, hey, this company's hiring and maybe you should try out this career. Let's go back to health. We actually know from the data from the Framingham study, the heart health study that came out of Massachusetts, that our friends have more of an impact on our health behaviors than even our spouse or our parents can have. There was a paper put out by Harvard called How Obesity is Actually a Communicable Disease in a Way, because when a friend had the largest spike in their weight, their best friend also followed. In fact, it was in the 50s in the percentage of the likelihood that you would, the impact that it would have on your weight, right? So those are just two factors, career, weight. Let's talk about loneliness. We are dealing with, and you've written about this so eloquently inside of your book, The Stress Solution, we are dealing with this epidemic of loneliness. People that are surrounded by other individuals, but actually don't feel like they have one person that's a best friend. And men, even more susceptible to this. I saw a YouGov study that, a survey that came out of the UK, and almost one-fifth of men say they have no close friend. Like, that is crazy to think, because friendships, connections, deep, meaningful relationships, they impact every aspect of our life, from our health to our happiness. I mean, you had Dan Buettner on your podcast and talking about the blue zones. One of the key factors in the blue zones is not what they eat, it's how they live, and these deep, meaningful relationships that are there, and how that plays into the sense of connection and belonging in life. Every area of our life is touched by friendships, but just like stress, because it's not always obvious, it goes overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, those blue zones in Okinawa, they have this concept called Moai mates. I think it's five friends that these guys have for life, that they're there to help, emotionally, physically when you need physical help, financially. They're basically five close people who are there for you for life. You know you've got that tight group to rely on, and you just shared a very alarming statistic about how many men don't even have one friend or someone. And it sort of echoes that we talk about loneliness. We talk about this loneliness epidemic that is fast spreading throughout the world, which is slightly ironic as we're living in this super connected culture, certainly super digitally connected culture. And a lot of people don't realize that men between the age of 30 and 45 are actually some of the loneliest, one of the loneliest groups in society. Now, that is striking. Like, one of the loneliest groups in society, men aged between 30 and 45, that is absolutely one of the reasons why the male suicide rate is so tragically high in that age group. So, you know, is this a problem, would you say, that applies more to men than women? Or does it show up in different ways in these different sexes?
So before I get into that question, which I want to answer, I want to set the stage for how it's impacting us all. Because the one thing there, both men and women, to look at in our modern day and age is that there's a few factors that are all happening at the same time. And then we can look at why it might be impacting men a little bit more than women. So the first thing is that our modern life is completely different than how we lived before. There's nobody that's written about this better than you, right? So your listeners know about this aspect. So let's look at some of the ways that it is different when it comes to our relationships, deep connections, and friendships. For thousands of years, no human being could actually really survive on their own without a community, a village, friends, individuals that had their back. You couldn't fetch water, chop wood, you know, make a housing, hunt. It was very difficult to do things on your own that way. And that's where human beings are so reliant on one another compared to, let's say, solo animals. Over the years, what's happened is that as we've gone away from the villages into cities and our modern lifestyle and jobs and technology that we have now, the interesting thing that's happened is that today we are not reliant on other people that we know for our daily survival. We're still reliant on other individuals. For instance, we're recording this podcast in our studio over here. Somebody out there somewhere is keeping these lights on at the facility, right? At the facility where they're running the electricity through this building. Somebody made our food this morning that we had at the cafe that we went to. But we don't have connection to those individuals. We can actually, if you wanted to, a human being, especially in a major city, the Western part of the world, could go an entire few weeks without seeing another human being, interacting with somebody that they need to know. They can order food on their phone through an app and have it delivered to them. They could watch Netflix. They could do all their job and computer work by themselves. We're not reliant on other people for our daily survival, right? So that's the first thing. But I would argue that actually, if you want to thrive, just because we're not relying on people that we know for our daily survival, the basics, shelter, housing, you know, food, I actually would argue that if you want to thrive in life, if you have big dreams and goals that you want to give attention to, if you want to feel love and deeply connected to the people in your world, if you're going through a challenging time in your life, maybe you're a new parent for the first time, if you're starting a business and you want to create something incredible, the bigger your goals and dreams are, the more you actually need deep, meaningful friendships around you to support you in that process. So we went from this time period in history where we were relying on each other for survival. Now we actually don't really need each other for survival. Necessarily people that we know, intimately know, friendships, but in a way, people are a little confused. They're confused because, hey, I'm living. I'm doing my job. I'm driving to work. I'm getting through the day. And you can almost forget that you're missing out on something. You know, one of my favorite sections that you wrote about inside of your book was the chapter on touch. The section on touch is so beautiful because you make the argument for, and you present the science to actually support it, that touch, we live in a society now through a combination of a bunch of different factors, touch is not as part of our daily life as it once was. And what are the impact of those things? And how can sometimes just a small amount of regular touch with our partner, with our friends, our colleagues, even sometimes with strangers, dramatically improve our health and prevent us from building up stress that's there, right? And I would argue in that same way that deep, meaningful friendships, what's the value of sitting down in the morning, going to coffee with a friend and saying, you know what? I've had a really tough week and this is what's on my mind. And even if that friend doesn't give you advice, just them listening profoundly lets your nervous system know that you are not alone. And that's why I'm raising the alarm when it comes to having us check in and saying, just because you're surviving doesn't mean necessarily that you're thriving in your life.
Yeah, I mean, so powerful. And I guess, you know, what you're saying is for most of our evolution, having a tight-knit community, having really good friends was essential. It was critical. You wouldn't be able to thrive. You wouldn't be able to survive without it. So it's gone from being critical to now being optional. And now that it's optional, many of us, A, we're not probably doing enough with our friends, and we can just really dive into why that might be. But as you say, a lot of us aren't even aware that this is an issue. And we sort of, in many ways, we can kid ourselves, but because of social media, and it's not all anti-social media, which we'll certainly come to, but it's also this whole idea that often we see what our friends are doing. We see so much of them on Instagram stories, or, you know, we see pictures of where they've been on holiday. We see pictures of their children. We see pictures of what they had for dinner last night, right? But we're not actually seeing them. And so it is, I think there's so many factors in the modern world that are sort of conspiring to make the norm. You mentioned the blue zones. The blue zones, what I love about them is that the environment dictates the outcome. People aren't trying to be healthy. The way their environment is set up means that actually they do have community, they do have friendship, they do eat minimally processed food, they are physically active. And I guess effectively what you're saying is that the modern environment for many of us is set up in a way where we actually don't need friends anymore.
We don't need it. It's not baked into our rituals and our schedules. And we still have friends. But the real question is the depth of those friendships. You know, most people will say that they have friends. And there's also, just like most people say, hey, I sleep every night. And one of the things that you talk about is what's the quality of that sleep? How deep is it? So even if you have friends, the questions that we can start to ask ourselves is what's the depth? Here's one simple question that I have for everyone and that I've brought up in other interviews before. Do you have someone in your life, right? Just check in for a second, ask yourself, do you have someone in your life that you can go to and be honest about what's not working right now? And it could be multiple people. There might be some parts of your life that you feel more comfortable sharing with one person. Other parts of your life, you feel more comfortable sharing with another person. But do you have somebody besides your partner, by the way, right? And we can talk about why that's important. Do you have someone besides your partner, your husband, your wife, your girlfriend, boyfriend, that you can go to and be honest about what's not working? We know that so much stress in individuals' lives comes from not accepting what's going on. You know what? I had a really tough week at work and I'm not really sure if this is the career that's right for me. We know that a lot of people don't actually go and tell somebody honestly that that's what's going on for them. And they hold it inside week, day after day, week after week, month after month. And then now it becomes a part of our lifestyle. So the first question is for everyone is, do you have somebody that you can go to and open up about honestly what's not working in your life? Because most people don't realize that they have a friendship and a deep connection challenge in their life until something goes wrong. I talk about friendship a lot on my podcast and on Instagram and post different articles and studies about the space that I follow. And I get a message that quite often looks like this. Hey, Drew, I'm a new mother, or a new father. Right? I've seen you talk about friendship. I've seen you talk about community and connection, how important it is. It didn't click for me until recently. I've had a kid. I'm the first one in my group of friends to have kids. And now my lifestyle is different. And maybe I've taken some time off work. And it's really challenging. My kid is not sleeping as well, or I don't know how to handle this. And I look up and I realize I'm kind of dealing with this alone. or I moved into another city. Let's talk about another factor that's fundamentally changing connection. So many individuals, especially young adults, young professionals, are not just moving once, but twice and three times. Every time you move to a new city, you got to start over. We used to grow up in a village and kind of stay within a certain distance of that area. Now we're being taken to all different parts of the country or the world or different cities where we have to go and create new friendships and new connections from scratch. Ask yourself, do you live right next to the people that you were friends with in high school and college? Most of us probably don't. And if you do, then you're lucky.
You say that, and I agree wholeheartedly with you. I'm just going to interject with a quick story from my clinic because
please.
I think this really echoes what you're saying. So I saw a patient recently, maybe a few months ago now, and I think it really illustrates exactly what you've just been talking about, but how it doesn't always transpire that just because you've got near friends nearby that you actually see them. So this is a 37-year-old chap who ran his own business, self-employed, driving a sports car, you know, working late into the evening on emails. He was working every weekend, you know, from the outside, super successful, you know, living a good life. Now he comes in to see me and he's not feeling so good. He says, "Dr. Chasti, I feel a bit low sometimes. Sometimes I lie in bed in the morning. I can't motivate myself to get out. Sometimes I'm trying to work and I can't concentrate. And often I just feel low." And he was concerned that he had depression. Now, as always, I try to really understand what was going on in the various components of his life. Now, I ran some tests, I did some bloods, they were all normal. And it was quite clear to me that actually all this guy did was work. And he was quite lucky. Like as you have just talked about, he lived in the village where he grew up and a lot of his friends lived nearby. But here's the thing, he never saw them. You know, and when I asked him about this, he said, "Yeah, you know, I kind of see what they're up to. I see what they're doing on social media. I see where they've been on holiday. I see what they had for dinner last night. I kind of see what they're up to, but I don't actually see them." And so what I suggested to him, I said, "Look, would you be open for the next maybe 4 to 6 weeks? Would you be open to this as a suggestion? I would love you at least once every week. I would like you to see one of your friends in person. And when you're with them, try and put your phones away so that you're really present for the interaction." And he was like, "Okay, sure. Yeah, I can give that a go." You know, the guy's pretty desperate because he's clearly not doing well and he sort of valued my advice. He goes away. He comes back 6 weeks later and I ask him, "How are you doing?" And he said, "Dr. Chasti, I feel like a different person. Like I feel like I've got my mojo back. I've got my energy back. I'm sort of concentrating more. I'm more productive. I'm feeling good." I said, "Okay, great. Now, can you tell me what you did?" He said, "Well, the very first time I got together with my friends, as you asked me to, we played a game of five-a-side football. Okay, that was great. But after that, all we did is every Sunday morning, we went to the local cafe and we chewed the fat over a latte together." Right? So, you know, this guy, did he have a mental health problem? Right? He had symptoms that were consistent with that, with the diagnosis potentially. But is not what he really had a deficiency of friendship in his life? And when he corrected that friendship deficiency, not only does he feel better himself, he's more productive in his job. He's, you know, so many other downstream effects in his life start to come together. So I just wanted to sort of break in your point there where, you know, if you were asking the listeners to have a look at their own life, and I was just wanting to jump in and say, many people might be listening and they might live near their friends, but maybe they're not prioritizing, right?
It's true. And really it emphasizes this idea that every society in the world, regardless of what your ancestry is or where you came from, we had rituals. We had rituals on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. You know, a few years ago, I went to Kenya with a group of my friends, part of this group called Summit Series. And we went and spent time with this local nomadic tribes people in northern Kenya called the Samburu. And they're cousins of the Maasai. And we got a chance to see how are they being affected by climate change and understand how they're also working in partnership with the government to protect elephants in the local population, and also just observe their culture, watch, take it all in. And one of the most beautiful things about it that was a great reminder is that there were weekly rituals that everybody in that local village that we went to, it's a nomadic village. So they, every 9 months or so, when the cows have eaten up all the grass in that area, they move on. But no matter where they moved to, everybody in that village knew the next few rituals that were coming up. This is a tribe that actually, it's kind of a little crazy, but they primarily drink milk. They don't eat really anything at all. And occasionally they'll drink some blood from the cow. You know, that's been how their lifestyle has been and probably how their gut microbiome has evolved.
Yeah.
They eat some twigs, some berries and that sort of thing. But every so often when there's a marriage or a birthday or something special or a time of the year, they'll get together and they'll have a big feast. And these rituals are there and they sing songs and there's this depth and there's this connection and it's baked into their life. Just like the Blue Zones and in your podcast with Dan, they're not going to the gym. They are walking uphill to go to meet their friends or to go get water or to go get food or to go to the local market. It was baked into their lifestyle. And your story highlights something very important that I tell most people is that, okay, let's say you do have friends and you're not seeing them in your area, which is very common. You're not making time for them. The question that I ask you is that, what rituals do you have on your calendar? Do you have something that I call, and is one of my number one tips when it comes to this, do you have an opt-out event? An opt-out event is something that regularly happens on your calendar with a group of friends. Maybe it's even once every 2 months. Once every 2 months, we're going to get together on a weekend and we're going to go to this thing. And it's a reoccurring event in the calendar. And you only have to let the group know if you can't make it. I have one of these events in my life. Every Thursday morning, there's a group of my guy friends. We have an opt-out event, and that event is we go on a hike together. It's 1 hour. We get up really early on Thursday. Some of the guys in the group have kids. Some don't. Everybody's busy. They have businesses. Some are running big businesses that are out there. And we get together locally here in the Pacific Palisades, just right next to Santa Monica, and we go on a hike. And in that hike, we just talk about what's working, but more importantly, anything that we want to talk about that's not working in our lives. And we don't even give each other advice. We just sit there and it's the bond and it's the community of walking and talking and just feeling like with you're with another group of individuals that understand you. And the most interesting of topics come up. People open up about challenges they're facing in their marriage. They open up about things that are not going great in work. They open up about how they had a severe drop in income because things changed in their business that might be there. Whatever it is, they know that once a week, and I'm not saying that everybody out there has to do this. I'm just giving an example.
It's what you do, right?
It's what we do, and we do it. We make it a priority because we've seen how much of an impact it's had for us. We've been doing this now for 4 years. We have some of the guys that drive 30 minutes away just to come to an hour-long hike because they've seen, and their wives come to them and say, you got to go to MMT. We call it Man Morning Thursday, right? You got to go because you're a completely different human being when you come back. It makes you a better father, a better husband, a better partner, has you show up more in different areas of your life. That's just one example of something that I do that anybody who's listening can do. And it doesn't have to be with a big group or a hike or take an hour. It's just simply having reoccurring event on your calendar to connect with your friends. And Rungan, if I could tell you one other thing, there's a book, it's called The Five Regrets of the Dying. And it's written by this author, Bronnie Ware, who was a palliative care nurse from Australia. And in taking care of thousands of patients, well, let me take that back. In taking care of hundreds of patients in the course of her work who were near the end of their life, you start to see that people open up and share their biggest regrets that they went through. And she started writing these regrets down with the permission of these individuals that she was taking care of. And she found there was a common theme. There was these five regrets that kept showing up regularly for these patients that were at the end of their life. And one of the top Regrets that was so fascinating. And I see people read the book and they always are so surprised, but it makes sense retroactively. One of the top regrets in these top five was, I wish I kept in better touch with these golden friendships that I had over the years and didn't get so busy that I just let them go. My next guest is my good friend and business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, and he's a practicing family physician and internationally recognized leader and speaker in this field of functional medicine. He's the founder and director of the Ultra Wellness Center and head of strategy and innovation at the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine. And he's the board president for clinical affairs for the Institute of Functional Medicine and a 14 New York Times best-selling author. Okay, we get it, Dr. Hyman. You're up to a lot of stuff. Dr. Hyman is also the host of The Doctor's Pharmacy. He's a regular contributor to many media outlets and news magazines and websites that are out there. Dr. Hyman joins me on today's mini episode to talk about why community and connection are so imperative for our overall health, as he's seen thousands of patients over the years. One thing Dr. Hyman has seen from seeing thousands of patients that are out there is that community is so essential. Tribe is so essential to our overall health. I asked Dr. Hyman a little bit about his personal community and how it's kept him mentally and physically happy. Let's listen in. You are so known for this category of food is medicine, but what else in your life has been medicine besides food?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, the most potent medicine other than food is love.
Tell me a little more.
Well, you know, I for years I was so focused on the minutiae in biochemistry, physiology, genomics, metabolomics, and all the deep science around functional medicine. I was kind of a geek studying mitochondria and the microbiome and the immune system. So into it all. And I was really great at figuring out how to help people if they did what I told them to do. And then I realized that, you know, it's really hard to get people to change behavior. And that the most powerful way to do that is the power of love and community and connection. And I realized that after going to Haiti and working with Paul Farmer and saw how he cured TB and AIDS, not by better drugs or surgery, but by using the power of community, a power he called accompaniment. We accompany each other to health. And I did that philosophy with the Saddleback Church in Orange County in California, where 15,000 people got together in small groups to help each other live better lives. And we put a healthy living curriculum in the groups. And through the power of the group, and there was no doctor, there's no health coach, there's no nutritionist. It was just the doctor who put together the program that was implemented in the group. It was so effective. It worked better than any other healthcare provider's care in terms of reversing disease. They had 250,000 pounds of weight loss in the first year. And I began to sort of realize that, you know, I could learn all the biochemistry and genomics and physiology and, you know, every bacteria in your microbiome, but it wouldn't matter if we didn't have the power of connection and love and support, accompaniment, feedback, accountability. And that is really the other hidden ingredient in functional medicine, which is, you know, food is medicine, but also love is medicine.
How do you integrate that into your life today? What does community look like to you on a personal level so that you can get that love into your day to day?
I feel so blessed. You know, I've spent my life collecting and curating amazing human beings. My only sadness is that there's so many that I don't really get to spend enough time with all the ones I want to spend time with. But I do have a core group of people who become essentially my tribe. And some are closer, some are further away, either physically or emotionally. But they're all part of this extended community of people who are looking to grow themselves, to make the world a better place, to have fun along the way, to laugh, to help each other. And it's just such a sacred, beautiful thing. And I'm just so, so blessed. So I think I'm one of the lucky ones, but I also been very intentional about it. I think, you know, we often don't focus on the power of love and community and friends, and we focus on our career, our family, or the few things we have around us. But it really is about the power of tribe and family and community, as a key ingredient for health. And in fact, you know, when you look at longevity research, you know, I'm going to biohack my way to longevity and live to 120 and use this supplement and this technique and this and that, the other thing. Turns out just belonging to a knitting group or a bowling club is a better predictor of your life expectancy than even, you know, diet or smoking. So I think when we look at the power of community and connection and being part of that. It is probably one of the most essential ingredients for health.
Now, there was a period of time where community wasn't something that you were good at or didn't necessarily like have. You've been honest with me in past podcasts that you've done where you really said, like, growing up, you kind of struggled with friendship. You didn't often fit in. And and that you kind of thought of yourself as odd. And,
yeah, I definitely am odd.
And I want you to talk about that a little bit, but also I think it's important for people who are listening here because last year, 2020, especially with shutdowns, lockdowns, pandemic, it was a very socially isolating year for a lot of people. Tell us about that time period and some of the things that you did to actually find that tribe and be intentional about it. And I think that'd be really helpful for people who are struggling in that category.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of stuff you layered in there, but to start with, you know, my struggles, I mean, obviously being a teenager is one of the most difficult things that humans go through, mostly because other teenagers are mean and weird and not very friendly and nice for most of us. And I, you know, I was a little weird kid. I, you know, I was super into books. I was thinking about things like Buddhism and the environment and social change and was reading Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Thoreau and, you know, Asian religion. I was just like into weird shit. And I couldn't really relate to anybody who was in my community or my age, or it was like, I was growing up in a 1970s suburban Toronto, sort of spiritual vacuum. And so I was just, it was a bad period. And then I, you know, ended up meeting somebody on the top of a mountain in the Canadian Rockies, who's become my best friend, my friend David. And he was the first person that was like, oh, you're you. I recognize you. And there was a sense of familiarity, family recognition. And that was the beginning. And then I, you know, went to college and found a community of people who were very similar to me and who are, you know, yearning, looking, seeking, wanting to know, wanting to play and discover. And through that, I actually joined a community group. There was a guy there who had written a book about community, and he, you know, gathered a bunch of college kids and other people. And we just basically would meet regularly and we just hang out, we'd have fun, we'd play games, we'd eat, we'd laugh, we'd talk, we'd share. And it was just a really powerful healing for me. And then, you know, as I've sort of built my life, I've continued to sort of build friends and community. And, you know, during COVID, it was challenging. So like everybody else, we were sequestered. And, you know, I made a real point of gathering my tribe. So like, there was another close friend of mine in town who was his daughter who was there, and his wife had died, and she was there with him. And so we formed a little micro bubble, and we got together and we had dinners, and it was really special in the midst of all that isolation. And also I started to reach out to friends. So I have a bunch of guy friends, and, you know, we decided to create a sort of a men's circle where every week we would gather through on Zoom, and, you know, we're all in different parts of the world, and we would meet, and we really had this beautiful drop in together, and we've done it every week, and it was, you know, it keeps going, and it's such a beautiful way to sort of use the technology, use the isolation, a way to help bring us together intentionally. And I encourage people to do that, you know, whether it's with family groups or friend groups. You know, it's not the same as all getting together for sure, but it's pretty nourishing.
We can eat really well, get great sleep, and work out several times a week in order to feel our best. But if we're missing out on key relationships in our life, deep and meaningful relationships, friendships that have our back, we're missing out on a huge sense of thriving. We may not need each other to survive, but we definitely need these deep and meaningful relationships to thrive in life. If anything, I hope this podcast has reminded you that if you do have a best friend, but you might have not talked to them in a little while, shoot them a text and tell them you miss them and you want to catch up. If you don't have deep and meaningful relationships in your life, don't sleep on it. Set the intention that this is something that you want to get better at, that you want to put priority on, that you want to give attention to. Thanks for tuning into this week's mini episode of the Drew Pruitt Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you next week.